And so ends another great Big Band and Beyond music show. Thank you, Joe, for the great 3 hours from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Friday. This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College, the station making ways, WHFR.FM. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is February the 10th, 2012. And my co-host Dennis Reimars is with me in the studio today. Dennis, did you survive the blizzard so far?
You know, I've been here all day. I didn't even know it was snowing.
When
it just
flurries, oh, you know, okay. But it's sort of a commercial radio put down by exaggerating what weather we have or might have. At worst, folks, if I've already scared you to death, they're predicting only an inch or two by tomorrow morning.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, depending on the temperature, which is still above freezing right now, it's melting as it comes down. But if it does get cold all of a sudden, be careful with your driving, as always, of course. So, anyway, we're going to proceed with the news of the week in Dearborn and the surrounding areas and add our own, I hope, somewhat educated and informed points of view that certainly you won't hear anywhere else on the radio dial in Detroit. Certainly, our opinions and any other opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. They didn't tell us to say these things, but thank you for letting it happen anyway. Well, looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, the continuing saga of Judge Mark Summers, who is no longer the Chief Justice of the 19th District Court in Dearborn, because Judge Richard Wiganek was chosen by the people that choose, state panel higher up. So not a punishment issue here, but the news was that Judge Wiganek does agree and support Judge Summers on the indemnity issue. Summers took action to reduce the staff at the 19th District Court as part of his responsibility as Chief Justice. And now two people have sued, or is it three upcoming? And the cases so far, he has, at least at the first level, lost, although they're all subject to appeal. Along with lawyers' fees, it comes to more than $1.2 million. Of course, the city of Dearborn says, we're not going to pay. The judge will have to pay. And that's because, first of all, the city of Dearborn tried to argue with the state, saying that he is your employee, which technically, where does Mark Summers' check as a 19th District Court judge come from?
Dearborn?
Comes from the state of Michigan.
Apparently. Oh, that's right. That's right.
He's a state employee. But in his appointed position as Chief Justice, and who did the appointment? The state.
Right.
Okay. He made decisions that later proved to be either unfair or unnecessary or not the proper procedures, whatever. And so the judgments are against him. And the city of Dearborn has sort of lost out because the state said, no, he's not our guy.
Right.
What he did was in managing the district court office, which, of course, he was supposed to do as appointed by the state judges,
right,
and their commission, whatever the commission is. But he said, well, the city of Dearborn does put up the functioning administrative cost for that district court. I mean, they pay for whatever cost and support personnel that's needed.
Sure.
Sort of a you know, the city does its part because the court is here and doing a service and blah, 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 but the state does their part.
Well, plus, as the chief administrator, you might need extra help, is what you're saying, too.
Right. And I don't understand. Of course, we haven't had a very good record of defending cases at the city of Dearborn level. Mm-hmm. We just lost, as I mentioned last week, a $100,000 case to pay legal fees, not to pay any money. Maybe a dollar went to the Christian pastor who was leafleting
right.
at, I think, last year?
No.
Or was it 2 years ago?
Back, yeah.
The Arab American International Festival and the Dearborn Police
right.
in 2009 from actually, well, they prevented him. The police stopped them from handing out their leaflets at that, what I would call a public event. And
apparently the court thinks so, too.
Yeah, the court said that's wrong in order to prevent that freedom of speech exercise. So, in any event...
So you're looking at the track record of the
well,
city.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah, and William Hulcrin, in my memory, since I've been a resident of Dearborn since 79, and I've read the local papers even before then, I've been a teacher here at the college since 1968.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh, you're old.
Is that something or what? Anyway...
I can't even count that high.
I know, and it's scary when I even mention it. But nonetheless, I remember several, not one, not two, but several, or more than several, court judgments that went against William Hulcrin when he was city attorney, and millions and millions of dollars. Now, of course, the city can be in the wrong, and no matter how good the attorney is, you're still going to lose the case if you don't have the argument.
Right.
So you could blame it on, mostly in those days, it was... things that our Dearborn Police Department did, you know, certain arrests or manner
maybe
of arrest.
Overzealous?
Well, whatever. I don't remember the details, so
okay.
I'm not going to specify that.
Sure.
But I know it was Dearborn Police Department primarily where we lost suits that were brought against it. And Hulcrin was the city attorney, and so he lost those. But the city lost, too. So maybe I'm not saying who was right or wrong there. It's just the city did lose, and there was millions of dollars. And now we lost another $100,000. The current city attorney, whose name probably, it's good I can't remember it, because then I can't sully her image.
Walling?
Right now. Yes, Deborah Walling. Okay, thanks, Dennis. Now she's in trouble.
No.
But
you're always fair and balanced.
You know, I don't think the city should have turned around and agreed to go after Judge Summers' money here. I think they should have supported him a little more. I clearly see the argument is that he was the state's employee and they appointed him to that administrative position as Chief Justice. They need to pay for anything that he did wrong. And he's doing it as an employee of the government.
Right.
And they need to pay for that or not pay for it at all. But you can sue the actions of a judge or a justice in this case and win. You can't sue the federal government, apparently, in terms of, you know, the military was, you know, shouldn't be in Iraq or something. You can't, there's certain limits on what you can, how you can sue governments. But in this case, you can sue the justice for an inappropriate action and not an inappropriate judicial decision. But in this case, it was an administrative decision.
But then they went right after Summers.
Right. So I think the city should have held back there, or the city attorney should have defended him more. But they were already slapped on the wrist by the state saying, no, he is yours, not ours. And they didn't seem to want to challenge that. And I don't understand why.
Either.
I'm not a lawyer.
They did back down quickly.
Yeah. And he's already had some money taken out of his current wages.
$3,000 as of last week.
You know, he's got a side to tell. We have invited Mark Summers.
Mm-hmm.
To come on the show and tell his side of it, because it's up to the appellate court now. I mean, the decisions have been made at the lower courts. Normally people say, well, I'm being sued, I can't make a comment. But he offered to make a comment.
Absolutely.
We just haven't scheduled the time on that. And he is not considering running again for this office. It is an elected office, but perhaps another judgeship
in
a different district. And so we'll have him talk about that. And I was thinking it's good to get the two sides or three or four sides of the issues, because I feel that having his name in the headlines for now, it's been 6 months, but almost constantly every week since late November, December,
right.
vilifies him unnecessarily. I mean, these rulings have almost consistently been against him, and the only positive thing is that Wygonik sides with him and says, it shouldn't, he shouldn't be held responsible on this payment. It should be the city or the state, I guess. But so Wiganik is standing up for him here. Arthur Wiganik, as now the Chief Justice, interestingly, last week was reported of appointing to the top administrative position somebody who currently is suing Summers. So I don't know, is that to pacify this person? Do they think she's going to drop the suit?
Is that Langdon?
No.
The name?
No. Well, whatever it is. But that was last week. So, and I commented on that. So that's a little bit strange to me. Someone that Summers let go and then is suing Summers and or the courts and or the city, depending on who gets the final bill, that Wiganik's, oh, she's the most competent and knowledgeable, so I'm going to put her at the top of administrative pecking order over here. Well, that's, of course, his decision. I mean, he's got his reasons, but I don't quite understand if he's supporting Summers, at least this time, in terms of the indemnity issue. And, of course, you know why he's supporting him in the indemnity issue. Because in the future, he doesn't want to get sued in this job either. I mean, let's be practical.
Here,
I mean,
this is from the press or the Times Herald. 19th District Court Judge Richard Wiganik announced January 20th that Sharon Langdon would return as Deputy Court Administrator February 1, a position she held from 96 till 2006 when she was removed by District Court Judge Mark Summers.
Yeah, that didn't get into the Times Herald last week. So
no.
It's like
the name rang a bell.
But name, Sharon Langdon, yeah. Sure. And I know she has years of experience, so there's no doubt about that. But it just seems to me Wiganik is playing it because he's up for re-election.
Right.
And other people are challenging him, although they thought they were going to be challenging Summers. But Summers isn't going to run, so now they're challenging Wiganik. And I can, as I said, very and just pragmatic, and maybe he has other reasons, like legal, judicial reasons.
Right.
In fact, the Press and Guide, if you want to read the story from last Sunday, February 5th, on this, they quote a legal expert, I think at Wayne State,
right,
saying that the indemnity issue is really a difficult legal issue, that there may be lawsuits about who owes whom and whether or not you can be indemnified, that is not responsible for paying this kind of legal suit brought against you, and if you're found guilty on it, it may go on for years. So we don't have a clear winner here, I don't think, or loser, except Wiganik does believe that the Chief Justice should be indemnified, which means now that he's in that position, he won't have to pay in case he gets sued.
Right, yeah.
But he sort of avoided a second suit from Sharon because he gave her the top job. So
right.
You can't say that.
Well, don't let her go now.
Yeah.
It's a whole can of
worms. If she would have, did she apply for that? Or was it just vacant and he decided to put her there? But if she applied for it, well, how could he sort of turn her down?
Right.
Because then they would, you know, her lawyer, the same as all the other lawyers, the lawyer, he's the same lawyer that won the other two suits.
Yeah.
They're going to charge that maybe in the future that Wiganik had the same biases that Summers, so he couldn't do that. I guess he had to put her in the top job. And I wish them all well, and we want the court to function properly and so on. To me, without knowing all the ins and outs of legal precedent and past laws, I kind of believe the state has to pay the outcome of this because, number one, he was, in simplistic terms, I know it's simple and law isn't always simple. You got to look at the total picture and all the precedents and prior rulings and so on. But Summers was the state employee, and Summers was appointed by the judicial commission, whatever, from the state that appoints chief justices to do their job, to make those administrative decisions. Whether or not the city paid for the administrative cost, I don't see how that makes the city responsible, and I don't see how, in either case, it would make Summers responsible. So we'll see. I'm sure he doesn't see it that way either, because he's appealing and doesn't want to have to pay the money out himself, of course. I don't see how he made any bad decisions there, but they must, you know, they can sway a jury with innuendo.
Absolutely. And we'll find out a lot more, right, from
Well,
from
I hope so.
Judge
I hope
Summers,
he can be open, and I think he needs to be in order to you know, get support for his race to be another court justice.
Another district, sure.
I think it's third district. Well, whatever.
I think you're right.
We don't know the results. And except for calling City Hall, which I don't think any citizen should have to do, the Dearborn City Council was mulling a study on the move to a newer facility. We talked about them, the mayor and the Dearborn Public Schools, having a little tour together, at least representatives from both, a building in the sort of middle of Dearborn, ADP building,
right,
which has been vacant for a while and is now up for sale at a fantastic price, low price, and very big, very modern building.
It's huge.
And it's so huge easily that all of the city offices and all the administrative offices for the Dearborn Public Schools could fit there. They could easily.
I drove by there and I was like, wow.
It's a monster building. Yeah. And I'm sure since it was recently built, it has all the amenities of energy efficiency and internet connections and
plumbing.
So on. Wow.
It does.
Yeah, because I don't know if they have that at the
City Hall.
Of course, they must have a City Hall.
Pretty old.
But pretty old, yeah. But they just got done, didn't they just do some upgrade on the parking structure next to the old City Hall?
Exactly.
And
it's really nice, too.
You know, what hasn't been and so this study, which would look at all the costs professionally done by an outside independent group, is going to cost, it's an architectural firm, $23,000. And Tuesday night, that is this week, Tuesday night, the city council as a whole was supposed to vote on whether or not to put out the money. Interestingly, the Dearborn Public Schools said, through Dave Mustonen, former student of mine, head of PR for the Dearborn Public Schools, we don't have any money. We can't pay for this.
Right.
So, you know. And the only problem I have with those studies is it usually winds up the people that do the study, they get the bid on doing the construction later, if there is any reconstruction to be done. And I don't think that's fair. I think the person that does the bid, the architectural firm, to be totally independent, they should not be allowed to do a bid on the construction. Maybe it's not fair.
I see what you mean. Like a conflict.
Well, they've done all the detail work about, you know, where the skeletons are buried.
Sure, sure.
Or whether or not it has asbestos. But they know very intensely what it's going to cost to do that. Now, their report will have to list
sure. Anybody most
of else
that, would have to
but anybody
well.
Else would have to come up to speed. Their bid would have to include money for their own review built into the market because they can't necessarily trust the other firm. They're going to so they will get the report, but it probably will not be absolutely detailed specific. So I think they are they're going to have to do sort of their own counter report or
right.
check report before they get started in or before they even make a bid for the reconstruction of that building, because there will be move-in costs of reconstruction.
Can I throw something out there? And this is naive Dennis saying this, but because if they move into the one building, that's going to leave the old City Hall mm-hmm. that will be vacant, as well as the Ten Eyck building, which is in the middle behind Oakwood Hospital.
Yep.
They'll leave two buildings vacant. And I know they talked about a residence or doing something over at the City Hall, maybe a historic building. Okay, but you have two open buildings. Why not, if we can get such a good deal on that third building, the building that's abandoned right now.
The ADP.
The ADP building. Why don't we buy that as an investment and sell it and use that money?
Well, apparently nobody wants to rent out the space.
You don't have to rent it. You sell it. I mean, you give another good. I don't know. It just seems leaving two places vacant doesn't make sense.
The economic climate may be improving, but it hasn't improved enough, I guess, for there to be even the sale of that building. Again, it's supposedly going to be available at very, very reduced cost. You might say, why doesn't somebody else bid on it?
That's what I'm thinking.
If it's so cheap.
Yeah.
You know, well, it just...
I think United Airlines is right along there, too. You know, right?
Yes, they have been. They have their own building. I'm surprised they're still there, but they are. And the other architectural firm with the wavy lawn is still there. So we'll see where that goes, folks. It's not an easy decision.
No.
What I don't know yet is it hasn't been put in the papers either, and if anybody listens from the papers, you'd think you'd want to put this fact in for the people that are reading the story closely. What's wrong with the current City Hall? I know that the top floor is not necessary and is not even occupied anymore.
But it's not big enough at the same time for the schools.
No, I mean, what's we know that the Ten Eyck Center needs major roof replacement. We're talking about millions of dollars.
That's an old building.
And soon. And the Dearborn Public Schools put no money aside to fix it, so they have a reason to look at an alternative situation.
True, good point. I didn't think about that.
And maybe somebody will buy the property or buy the building from them. It'll be down the road, but you know. So, but the City Hall, is just that historic nature of it to see it destroyed. You know, I don't know. But I think it would, you know, if you're going to make East Dearborn a thriving business district, it needs to be a thriving residential district, too. So I just think some of the similar townhouse developments that are just south of City Hall should be expanded into that area if you totally tear down the building and start over again. But that's going to cost a fortune. That's a big building with a basement and all that. You know, everything that supports that and that parking structure could then be used or rent it out to the other residents.
Do you have any
right
idea?
Right now, it's too expensive for the residents. I don't think, maybe they have a deal with the city to use that.
Right.
But I don't think they'd have to lose that.
Do you know what the occupancy or vacancy rate is of the condos around there? I'm curious if those are full. Because those are really nice townhouses.
They didn't look... I mean, was during Guido's administration, and
right.
I thought they had pretty good occupancy.
I think so, too.
I think most of them were occupied.
Because I thought that would be a great reason to carry over the residents to where the city hall is now.
Right.
But I'm not clear. You know, West Dearborn, it seems like there's a lot of open buildings, so I didn't know.
You know, they did open, and this is great for East Dearborn. In the former, I think it was a Kroger shopping center. It's another shopping center now, locally owned shopping center. I mean, grocery store, and that's good for people that want to walk to a store and not have to drive to get their food and fresh vegetables and so on. And the so I think there's some possibilities there, but it just being. So used to seeing City Hall there,
I think that's it.
Sort of hurts the image in our minds. But we should try to get past that, folks. I believe in hanging on to the past, but,
to a degree, right? As long as it's functioning. Yeah. I'm curious what's wrong with it, too. And you're right across from the Arab National Museum, which is, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a really kind of a dynamic little corner there over there in Schaefer. And is it in Schaefer, Michigan?
Yes.
And you have the new town center or whatever the new building is.
Well, the medical facilities.
Medical thing, which is really nice.
Yeah.
It's just a real kind of a cool corner there.
Yep. So we'll see where that goes and we'll let you know. But the problem that I had was, and I didn't call City Hall, but nothing on their website, nothing about what happened Tuesday night at the council meeting. Okay. I assume there's a cable TV video out there somewhere that
right.
rotates, but I haven't watched that. It's hard to find. It's not always the same time. Well, it is always the same time. I just don't know the 24 times that it's normally on. So my fault, I guess. The same thing goes with the results of the housing. Was it the Dearborn Housing Commission? You know, they were supposed to make a decision, I thought this week, once and for all, about the Goodwill Building.
Right.
And this week, in, I think, the Wednesday edition of the Press and Guide, is it Mike Albano?
Yes.
He wrote a very positive support, because he's always positive. So positive. That's impossible. But that's the kind of guy he is. And it's interesting to read something that is always positive and supportive. He's even supporting Mr. Newman of trying to make available at whatever cost the Inca facility that Mr. Newman didn't lower the rent enough for 15 years to allow anybody else in there.
I promise you it's not charitable.
Got to be so rich, folks, when you can leave a big property like that on Michigan Avenue vacant with no income. Must be some sort of tax write-off.
It has to be.
You know, because as long as he advertises it at whatever cost, that doesn't matter, and nobody responds, maybe he can use it as a constant tax write-off. I mean, there's, as Mitt Romney says, I'm paying every penny I owe.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
He probably is.
According to the laws that you and other rich people set up, of course you're paying every penny you owe, but who wrote those laws? And is it fair? We got to go into that later. But I'm just saying, I don't know the result of the Housing Commission issue, too. So I'm really excited about what possibly could be in the Sunday Press and Guide, the next local paper, because there was nothing at Patch.com. They didn't go to the Housing
at all. No.
Commission, and they didn't apparently go to the council meeting, and I'm not sure they usually do anyway.
No.
So those two issues, we just don't know until next week. Stay on the edge of your seats, folks.
Actually, I'm really good. It looks like they're making changes to the facade of that old building. Was it Inca, right?
Yes.
The computers? And that's what it looked like. Every time I go by, it looks like a little more progress is made.
In the days when you could sort of build your own PC, they would help you put it together, but you could choose all the innards.
Didn't Snyder start that with Gateway?
Gateway...
Kind of put your own together.
Never had a kit, per se, but Gateway was a mail-order only, sort of like a Dell computer company that would put it together however you wanted. And they did have a store in Dearborn at the Fairlane Meadows there for a while.
They had
a storefront. And that's what probably did them in. Their storefront stores, when they tried that around the country, just didn't catch on. Of course, Inca didn't catch on either, but they're not part of a computer manufacturer. They were just buying miscellaneous pieces, high quality, no doubt, and building them for you, and then you'd get them from there. Although I guess you could buy the individual pieces from them and do some hobbyist work yourself.
If you knew how, sure.
Yeah. Today everything is so sealed and so miniaturized that you really can't build your own computer. I mean, you can buy the big box and put a PC together yourself, not a Mac anymore, and good luck to you.
Yeah.
Okay. I wondered, it was interesting that, I'm not going to go into the details, but the public schools are offering senior discounts. It's a new package of discounts for senior citizens in Dearborn, and that's on page 4A of last Sunday. I won't go over what they are. There are slight discounts on some of the educational offerings by the Dearborn Public Schools, you know, the sort of College of Lifelong Learning, as mm-hmm. we call it over here, adult ed. There are discounts, or is it free to get into some of the athletic events? And I think, you know, they had these before, but I think they brought these out again because of the support they always need when it comes millage time. Dearborn senior might say, my kids are grown. Why should I vote for a millage? Why do I need to pay school taxes anymore?
Right.
I don't use them. My family doesn't use them. Well, of course, the community always needs educated children to grow up to be educated adults. And so I know I'm totally willing to do my share. I know how important that issue is. But the discounts are that extra little incentive, and they've increased a few of them. I could qualify, but I, because I'm so old, as you said, Dennis.
I didn't say
but I don't need to. I mean, those are things I don't normally participate in anyway. But it's out there, folks. If you're a senior, look into that. It's cool, I guess.
That's cool. And then the money goes back to the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you know what? Do it for people other than seniors.
They're losing money by offering these senior discounts. The schools are, but from potential income from them. But
how many athletic events would you attend? You know what I mean? Assuming you use all of them.
I had enough of them in high school.
Yeah, right. You know, I think we've talked. That's a whole other show.
That's a whole other decade, too, or two or three back. Okay, also, just to your attention, in last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide, Scott Held, who is a local person, and he's got email and his tweeting address and everything, I think, there. But he wrote a response, very good, too, and we brought up this question in the last couple of weeks. He felt that Governor Snyder, when he did his State of the State address, says we got to repair our infrastructure. It's a big part of his budget, which was just specifically announced yesterday, and we're going to talk about that and look in detail about that in our second half of our show, coming up in just a couple minutes. But he makes the argument that the road proposals include raising tax on gas and other usage taxes. There was some study done in the Free Press. And, of course, you know what the question was. Do you want to pay more money to the state to fix our roads? 58% said no.
Worded that way, that's a pretty, well, you know.
Nobody ever wants to pay more money for anything.
No,
but what are the choices?
Right.
I mean, well, the roads aren't too bad now. I can drive around the potholes. I can stand the bumps. Well, yeah, but that's no good for tourism. It's no good for, you know, and as Snyder points out and others, too, I did watch Governor Snyder, and I'll make more comments in the second half, on the internet from his Facebook page. They had a live feed of him receiving tweets and email about his budget. And a State of the State address, and he just sat there for 45 minutes answering one question after another. Not all of them. They were screened for him, but somebody was yelling the questions at him. He had a couple phone calls that came in. They were no doubt.
Oh, how old-fashioned.
Yeah, screened, too.
No tweet.
Yeah, but and I think he made good presentation overall, but I got more to say. Oh, boy, do I. About that later. But the point is, folks, with cars getting more fuel efficient, we have to repair the roads, and as Snyder said, I said last night, if the roads get so bad or the bridges get so bad that we have to replace them all, we can't just cover them over or paint them up or, you know, get the rust off there and then recoat them. If we got to replace them, if you got to dig them up from the bottom, if they get so bad, they can't just be temporarily fixed. It'll cost billions more. Where's that money going to come from? And we've waited a long time to get, and these things are crumbling rapidly, especially in Michigan winters with the freeze-thaw cycles that just destroys any sort of modern concrete out there. Now, a couple people made the point, too, why don't we use better building techniques so that roads will last 20 years? And there is such technology for like 10 or 20% more cost. If you had to totally rebuild them,
Right. They
would last a whole heck of a lot longer than they have been. So, but where is that money going to come from up front? Most of our roads don't have to be rebuilt totally at this point, nor most of our bridges. But you don't want to put it off too long. Like the Ambassador Bridge, is very old, 1929. It needs to be significantly maintained, whether or not it's a rebuild totally. And in fact, Matty Moran, however it's pronounced, he has said that he wants to put another roadway, attach it to the side of the Ambassador Bridge, so that when they need to repair other lanes or other parts of the old part, that won't decrease traffic that much.
Okay.
So, but the state of Michigan doesn't want to go that route. They want a whole new bridge, of course.
Okay.
And Snyder had a response to that last night, too, which I thought was quite pointed. He usually doesn't get so direct.
He almost never gets angry
visibly. He tries to keep his cool. I think it's very commendable. But we'll talk about more of that more in the second half. Just finishing up the first half here with sort of headline news. Dearborn Press and Guide this last Wednesday, our Henry Ford Community College Ice Carving Club. Now, there's actually classes in teaching people how to do ice sculpture. And it's existed for many years under Chef Richard Teepel, one of our full-time instructors in the hospitality program here. And it's definitely an employable skill. You may not know that, but people get a lot of money for banquets and weddings or paid for at hotels for special events to do this sort of ice carving. And you say, well, it's only in the winter. No, it's winter, summer, wherever they can keep the room cold enough until they need to put it out.
I got one for you. A friend of mine traveled only 2 years because he actually met a woman, started a family, and he grew up. But for 2 years, he did this ice carving on cruise ships. That's all he did was travel on cruise ships. And what a gig.
I've done a couple cruises, and that's right. At the big banquets especially, there's always a new ice sculpture
for
there.
For 2 years he did that. Yeah. I'm like, you know, God bless you.
Yeah, life is tough sometimes.
Yeah, really.
This is first place they won in a collegiate championship, and the story is top of page 1A. It's the kind of great programs we have, and adjunct programs, getting people out and about, learning skills. We have so many such classes, and this is not an advertisement for them, because it's a public service announcement, even if it was more direct. It's my personal opinion. I commend Richard Teepel. He's a personal friend of mine. See him often over here in the Student Center where WHFR is, and they were very deserving. They've done well in international competition for years. Even over in Japan, they went to something a couple of years ago and came off very, very highly rated. I don't think they got first in that, but it's just wonderful, these kinds of specialty programs that we offer, along with all the other basics. And that question about fairness, Dan Kolovas had an editorial opinion, response to Al Foster, sort of the Republican Party spokesperson in Dearborn in the Press and Guide, and who said, oh, the Democrats, their new buzzword is fair. You know, what does that mean? Nothing fair about what they say. Well, he's pointing out that fairness, as he defines it, is essential to democracy. If we get a chance, we'll flip-flop back to it. But after Jim Hightower's comments here, we're going to come back and talk about Governor's State of the State address and the specifics of the dollars in his budget proposal as he introduced them just yesterday. So we'll be right back with more of the WHFR Journal. 89.3 FM, the station making waves.
Last year, during an intimate chat and chew dinner with some Silicon Valley high-tech barons, President Barack Obama posed a question to Steve Jobs, baron of the Apple Empire. What would it take to make iPhones in the United States? Good question. We need to put more people to work building more stuff in America rather than shipping all that manufacturing off to China. Instead of answering, however, Jobs just said, those jobs aren't coming back. Well, why not? Why shouldn't American corporations go all out to help meet the obvious economic needs of the nation that nurtures them? The high-techers don't mention the obvious reasons for their jobs dodge, raw corporate selfishness. Rather than looking inward, however, they blame America. First, they wail that American schools are failing to produce the high-skilled workers they need, so they must go abroad. Yet, these very executives constantly demand that governments exempt them from paying the taxes necessary to improve schools. Second, they say that the U.S. lacks an integrated supply chain, which would locate makers of assorted computer parts right next door to assembly plants. But wait, that's their fault. Apple, Dell, and the like have the market clout to entice suppliers to relocate anywhere in America. Indeed, U.S. suppliers say they've had to move to China because that's where Apple et al. Went. Finally, industry leaders blame us, their customers. They assert that we insist on getting a new cheap iGadget every year, no matter where it's made or how workers are treated, so we force them to abandon America. This is Jim Hightower saying, hogwash! These self-serving, over-pampered high-tech elites can make iPhones and anything else right here in America. But they care more about their bottom lines than their country or their workers. And it's time for us to call them on it.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Sorry, we're closed. In one of the saddest signs of the times, this message is popping up all across the country as governors and legislators are cutting off funds and shutting off access to one of the finest, most popular assets owned by the people of our country, state parks. More than 6,600 of these jewels draw some 700 million visitors a year to their grand vistas, historic sites, wildlife, campgrounds, educational centers, and lodges. Parks are literally a tangible expression of America's democratic ideals, common ground for every man, woman, and child to enjoy and experience. For the middle class and the poor, who can't jet off to luxury resorts for a getaway or vacation, these spaces offer a form of real wealth, something that each of us literally owns, knitting us together as a community and a nation. Yet, too many spiritually shriveled, small-minded, and short-sighted state officials are snuffing out this uniting social force, stupidly treating parks as nothing but a budget number, or worse, a piece of the nanny state to be axed in the name of ideological purity. Top politicos in most states are closing many of their parks, slashing hours and services at others, or simply handing over the public's asset to profiteering corporations. Idaho's governor has proposed eliminating the entire parks department. California shut the gates of a fourth of the state's parks last year. Officials in Arizona and Florida intend to privatize their parks. Washington State has cut off most of its park funding, and Ohio has okayed oil drilling in its parks to replace state financing. This is Jim Hightower saying, as Woody Guthrie said of outlaws, some will rob you with a six-gun, some with a fountain pen. Shutting parks is theft by the in-laws, the political insiders who are stealing the people's property, stealing from America itself.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And we hope you do that. Always love to keep up with Jim Hightower. Very stimulating, progressive, populist, I would call him, because progressive, ooh, I don't want to be a progressive. Well, you don't want progress? Sure you do. Everybody does, unless it's ugly progress that kills our trees and pollutes our air and makes us go belly up economically in a few years. Okay, speaking of economics here, Governor Snyder had his State of the State address a couple weeks ago, and it was a good open presentation, a lot of changes, a lot of things he wants to see happen, his relentless positive action. As he calls it. In fact, last year, of course, you know how the State of the State went last year, or at least a comment from him said, it's a new day in Michigan. We're leaving gridlock and negativity in the past. Well, with Republicans in majority everywhere, they just passed whatever they wanted to, but they didn't pass everything Snyder wanted. And the first thing I have to mention, since I mentioned Mr. Maroon, who is the billionaire owner of the Ambassador Bridge, last night, Governor Snyder at 6:30, he has a Facebook page, which he started as a campaigner, Rick Snyder for Michigan. It's interesting that he didn't use the government, the State of Michigan website for this back and forth. Again, it was live. It was fed through the internet, and you would go to facebook.com/Rick Snyder for Michigan. That was last night, 6:30. He talked for about 45 minutes answering questions that were, taken for him, supposedly off Twitter and off Facebook.
I'd say he went on Facebook to get more people, but you said there were only like 430
something. Yeah, at the high point, I stayed connected, and you can tell there how many people.
Right.
It started about 200 people, And he started 2 minutes late, so the first Facebook comments were, where is he? Why didn't he show up on time? It's 2 minutes late, folks. Boy.
Yeah, he's busy.
You computer people. come on. It's not commercial television that starts exactly on the second because they're making billions of dollars. This is, well, anyway, it was called Reinventing Michigan Online Town Hall. And so, however the questions got to him, a lot of people on the Facebook comments were, I've asked questions and questions and questions this time and the last time he did it. Nobody's ever gotten my question. Well, I didn't see any questions, although they're scrolling by really fast, that any questions asked as comments on Facebook. I couldn't see the Twitter stuff.
Right.
But, I don't know. I didn't see any that were picked up from the Facebook flow. But, it's hard to watch them constantly. They keep changing. They keep moving up on the screen the way I had my screen set up. And so that was an issue. But about the bridge, he said, without getting nasty, he said that the billionaire owner, the Ambassador Bridge, and the TV ads that you see so much, almost constantly, are, and I'm going to use this word, although he didn't, lies, okay? They are misinformation. And even the people on Facebook couldn't understand this when he said, the new bridge will cost us nothing. Nothing. What does the ad say? $2 billion are going to be pushed on Michigan taxpayers.
Right.
The bridge will cost us nothing. And the Facebook crazies immediately say, how is that possible, you say? How can we have a big bridge and it won't cost us anything? He very simply told you, folks, don't you listen to the governor? Half of it will be paid for by Canada up front to build it. The rest will be paid for by the tolls of the people that use the bridge. That goes both ways. So the Canadians that come over here, they'll pay part of that extra cost. And yes, Michigan taxpayers will pay for some of the bridge through the use of going back and forth. Well, duh. It's, there will be more travel. There will be more traffic. Even a local conservative Republican that I talk to regularly, he says, we got to have a second bridge. What if there's a terrorist bombers. That's the only bridge to Canada for, you have to go to Port Huron for the next closest one. And then the other one, if you go south and east, what is it, Buffalo, New York or something? You got to go all the way around Lake Erie for the other one. So Niagara Falls.
You're right.
So, if we need to evacuate folks for any reason, we'd like to be able to go east. And I know any road is going to be totally overloaded if there's a terrorist threat or
the tunnel. Can you imagine how the
catastrophe?
Traffic,
yeah, sure. But still, for the sake of business and the flow, we need to have a second bridge. Mm-hmm. And this is, it should not be Republicans should love it. It's an incentive to business. Okay, it's not owned by a private businessman, but that shouldn't happen anyway. Koronick says government should own international access back and forth. I don't know how we ever got into this in 1929. It's true that he is a private individual. He's not going to close the bridge for some personal reason. We'll just send our National Guard or U.S. Army in there and take it back over. So he's not going to restrict us from that. But the bridge is so old, we need that second span. And of course, the last TV commercial is, an activist judge. Okay, come on. There's Republican activist judges as well as judges need to do things, folks. They need to be activists. But if you disagree with a judgment they've made, a ruling, an edict, then of course now they become an activist judge. Well, that judges have to make rulings, decisions that will have a consequence in reality. That's always activism. Somebody goes to jail. That's in my definition.
Right.
A judge is always an activist. But you say, well, he's got a social agenda. Well, he has to follow the laws. If he doesn't, then there's an appeal you can make. But if your appeal doesn't win, he followed the law.
Right.
Okay? And they have some flexibility in terms of the judgments they give. In terms of the kinds of sentencing. For example, the 19th District Court has set up a plan. I think it was under Holcren originally, but certainly under Summers, too. You need to work off your punishment. Rather than going to jail, you've got to do community service. And that's at the discretion of the judge. They have that flexibility. Is that an activist judge that forces people to clean up the streets or to help with some other public works program? Sure, it's an activist judge, and everything they do is activist. Give me a break here. Anyway,
that
the maroon ad said, the activist judge sent the the rich person, owner to jail. How dare a rich person go to jail, they were implying. Well, that he paid him to say that. Do you think everything you see on TV is objective? Is just the facts? This is lies. You know, well, they can't put lies on TV. Of course they can, all the time. And even this show, we get things wrong. By the way, yeah. I just remembered the thing I got wrong a couple weeks ago, and hopefully nobody believed me because it was covered so much on the media. Everybody instantly knew that I was wrong. I said when advertising was pulled from the American Muslim TV show in December, I said it was Home Depot. Shame on me. Everybody, you know, I mean, we're not here to cover the national stuff. It was Lowe's.
Yes.
So if you want to...
We got a call.
Because of me, yeah, we got a call, but I mean, other people said, well, he's so silly. Everybody knows it's Lowe's. It's not Home Depot that pulled their ads. They didn't have any ads on American Muslim. Let's criticize them for that.
Yeah, okay. There was...
Shame on them for not advertising.
You got that in there.
No, let's not be crazy. But so why ever Lowe's did it, they had a right to do it, and you have a right to boycott Lowe's because of that if you thought it was inappropriate for some reason.
Right.
But if any of you stopped buying from Home Depot because of what I said, that was wrong.
Now you tell
me. And I've told you for years, if you've listened, don't believe what I say. If I've stimulated you to think, oh, there's an issue here, check it out somewhere else. Okay, get the full... Because all news, unlike what Dr. House says on that TV show, All People Lie, you know, it's a complicated world. A truth, 1 minute, even with some evidence for it, may not be quite as true in the next minute when new evidence comes up.
Everything's relative, sure. Sure.
Well, not everything, but, you know, I'm not related to you, Dennis, but still.
Oh,
I don't think I am.
Some might argue that we're all related.
Yeah, peas in the pod.
Here we go.
No, but so be careful what you listen to, and the Home Depot flub that I made cast aspersion against them. I apologize to Home Depot, but I know that most of you who are listening to the show are so smart, so quick, you knew I was speaking incorrectly. And it's just an example. It's not just Koronik that gets things wrong. It's Fox News. It's MSNBC. It's your local news people.
I think it's everybody but my wife, if you ask her.
Yeah, it's a complicated world. And before you make a big life decision, like to boycott something or to protest something, it'd be good to get some more information. I was amazed at the idiocy of, at one point, the 400 people who were watching online Rick Snyder last night.
Right.
Only 420 people at tops at any moment during the 45 minutes Snyder was online. And that's pathetic, I think. But nonetheless, the comments they instantly type into Facebook, and it instantly shows you the scroll, are some of the most uneducated, stupid things. I mean, he says this bridge will be no cost to taxpayers. And they instantly say, oh, that can't happen. That can't be true. It's your governor, you silly person, telling you this. Did you fall for all the rich billionaire slick ads that have been running for the last several months? Did you think they were true? Snyder's been saying, if you had a chance to listen to our governor, they're not true. The facts are wrong. At the very best, it's highly selective facts and very definitely slanted. So I hope the Republicans do the right thing. This week, Jack Lessenberry has pointed out again in his Metro Times editorial how much money Maroon has spent. And it's been identified now to the dollar because they had this they had to reveal campaign financing, campaign contributions recently, you know, for last year.
Mm-hmm.
Although apparently it didn't reflect the last 3 months. So whatever Maroon paid to the legislators as campaign contributions wasn't reflected. But he's been, you know, sending tons of money to Lansing people who he thinks will vote his way. And that's the influence of money in politics. That's probably why the Republicans didn't go along with the Republican governor, folks, is because the people that voted against it were heavily contributed to. We're talking about tens of thousands to 100. In fact, the Michigan Republican Party got $100,000 directly from Maroon. Isn't that sweet?
Well, you know.
You don't think money buys influence? You are sadly mistaken. In fact, one time I met a couple decades ago with John Dingell, our esteemed and honorable representative from this area, and we pointed out his campaign contributions. And he tried to say, well, I don't pay any attention to who pays me what. And even if I did, I wouldn't vote that way. unless it was the right thing to do. Well, maybe he thinks so, but in the back of his head, there's still a conflict of interest, and maybe it'll sway him.
That's human nature.
I've said before, if you're going to do any campaign financing reform, you can have the lobbyists. You need spokespersons there to take meetings and give them documents. Keep every lobbyist group away from those kinds of contributions. Is it, well, can we stop a rich person from giving their hard-earned money in a campaign contribution? I think so. I think there's got to be a limit, because Maroon's money can buy a lot of influence, and I can't. I know. I don't have that kind of money. I can't get that kind of attention. If I pick up the phone and call, somebody might answer. But, he has got instant lobbyist power because of the hundreds of thousands, it may even be more than a million, that he contributed last year to key Republican legislators, and even gave to a Democrat that he thought was on his side, and then the Democrat turned around at the last minute and voted for the bridge.
Oops.
Because, well, the Democrats have always been for the bridge. Let me point that out. It's not a Republican issue. And, of course, that's why I think a lot of the Republicans feel upset with Snyder, or it puts them in a bad situation, is that it was the Democrats that were for the bridge to start with.
Right.
For years, they were for it, because it'd be good for business, good for the state.
And if you
take
some money, you look real bad if you don't get your way, you know?
Well, right.
Wow. And you're in favor of anonymous donations, too, weren't you?
Like if they could be somehow anonymous,
I know
that
that's
would
tricky.
Help.
That's what we talked about.
I doubt you could ever keep it totally. I mean, it should not be anonymous to the public. The public needs to know who's putting money into these people. The thing that's been revealed, both on Craig Folly's show and WDET, he had an expert in, and there's a whole center in Michigan, a nonprofit organization, Center for Public Responsibility or something, and all they do is go through these documents. Because guess what? These public contribution documents, they're not organized. They're all over the place. It takes hours and hours of research to find out who
design,
and where.
Yeah.
This is also true because, remember, there was a little tiff about last week about Fecano.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's been going on for several months now. The executive director of Wayne County government, that he was putting undue pressure on those he had appointed to kick back to his own political campaigns. And there's a question of, and so they had to go through all the documents, and they said it took hours and hours and hours by several people to connect the dots about who were his appointees and did they contribute or not. Now the question is, if Fecano says, well, I didn't force him to contribute, yeah, but he's the one that appointed them. He could unappoint them if they don't. And the average was a kickback of $500 a person. And apparently Wayne County has a lot of people that got appointed by him to a job.
Right.
This is tens of thousands of dollars, okay, if not 100,000 or more, for his campaign reelection fund, okay? And yeah, it was revealed, but you had to, an average person doesn't have the time to dig or understand what the heck is going on. Same thing with Maroon's contributions. Even if it's totally transparent, which means it's out there for the public to find out, it's not organized, it's not on a website, it's not categorized, you don't have full information unless you look at the piece of paper.
Sure, you don't even know if you have access to all of the information.
So we don't have total transparency right now. If we totally did, I mean, Snyder is always talking about the Michigan dashboard, and now he's requiring dashboards of local schools. You know what that is? I actually have to look it up today, because for years, a dashboard, that must sort of the readouts of the instruments about how your car is running.
It's a similar model, isn't it?
It is some sort of efficiency rating,
right?
Like how much gas economy you're getting or whatever.
Sure.
And some sort of criteria that they set up, and it's easily accessible. You can just look and see it, mm-hmm. whether it's on a website or whatever. And Michigan, the state, does have such a dashboard. I think it's michigan.gov/opengovernment.
Okay.
Although you could Google for Michigan dashboard, I guess. But, and of course, what criteria are they using? How accurate is the information? Those are all things. But we never had such a thing. Easily visible standards.
Right.
Results based on standards for how good you're doing your job.
They don't allude to a car dashboard at all, do they? They don't have like a low.
That's where we got the term from. It doesn't look like. Does it look like
a low pressure gauge to grease the wheels of government?
Well, no, it might be fun to have some fun gauges.
Well, that's what I would do. I think you would too.
Yeah, yeah. We got so I don't. But the city of Dearborn, and as part of the budget recommendations here, oh look at the time fly. The schools in Dearborn, they will get more money next year. Primarily, the budget like this is like this, folks. It's $48 billion. Okay, that the state's going to spend next year. Okay, that's the governor's recommendation, and somehow revenues only come to $20 billion. So I don't know what the heck is going on with the other $28 billion. But it's a 20-page document. You can get it from the state of Michigan website, and I didn't print out all the numbers. I just the summary. But a key principle is that ongoing spending and one-time revenues are no longer commingled. In other words, separate parts of the budget for the things you need sort of just to keep things going, and then one-time revenues that won't be repeated again. You know, it just...
But that makes sense to break
you win
it
a
down.
Lottery or something.
Sure.
Can the state win a lottery? No, but...
no, it's not a person.
A one-time income is no longer put together. So he's trying to clean things up, and I really give him credit. He has a lot of good ideas on all these things. Very, I have to say, very liberal. Because he's continuing, unlike a lot of Tea Partiers or others, a lot of support to welfare. He says he's giving help to education, and
I want to bring this up right now because we have some, I won't call them detractors, but some people that made comments, including our own George Duraney, our state representative George Duraney, who, and I'll quote him right here in this release, he said what he found most concerning was the lack of emphasis on restoring the devastating cuts that are already impacting the quality of education that our kids are receiving. So it's like we took all this money, and yeah, according to, this is David Hecker, who's part of the AFT, he says the same thing. He's like, you took away $470 per student. Great, we get back $170, but it's not enough.
Right.
And that was just through
and the
K-12.
Increases for next year at all levels, K-12, community college, universities, will be anywhere from 1% to 3%, depending on how you look at it, but tied to certain criteria. Like establishment of a dashboard for the K-12
sure.
and so
like,
on. I think we've already got one in Dearborn.
It's
I haven't,
almost incentive
I looked
based,
for it.
You know?
But here's one for the community college. Since we're here at community college, is this fair, folks? Think about this. We will get more money if we have more students completing degrees. Okay.
Okay. Well, that's great.
More degrees. Do we have anything to say about? I mean, I think that's only going to encourage some people to dumb down degree requirements to kick them out, you know, and get
right.
that number to give the focus here.
Or
also, the
it'll
governor
keep them in to keep getting degrees.
and so degrees. I mean, people drop out for all kinds of reasons, folks, and you know, transportation issues,
sure.
You know, all kinds of things happen, and to tie our increase or increase on the little increase he's proposing to the number of degrees we grant, that is really hurts.
Yeah.
Also, here's one that doesn't make sense. Universities doing a better job of holding tuition costs down will receive greater funding. How does that work out for anybody? Figure it out. Think about this. If we don't raise tuition, it means we don't have money to operate properly
right.
or as well because costs are always going up. So we're going to get greater funding.
From the state.
But if we raise tuition, we wouldn't get that funding, but we'd have
it.
The money anyway.
But
you wouldn't need it.
The funding.
What? It either way, it works out the same. It seems to me. I don't know what the differences are here. Maybe the if we hold in tuition down somehow, they're going to give a ton more money.
What's
the difference to the taxpayer ultimately? I mean, it doesn't make sense either one of those things for community colleges or for higher ed.
Well, the perception of the college for having low tuition rates is good.
I understand, and this is awfully difficult to do, to get to the quality of the instruction, the quality of the classes and the coursework behind the degree. Okay?
Well, yes.
That's really tough to quantify that. We've been trying for years here. We've had such sort of class reviews and curriculum reviews and improvements in place for two decades here at HFCC, and we have to constantly tweak the details and keep looking at test results here. It's tough to do, but we're actively involved in that. I'm sure that the K-12 is too. We basically need more money to keep investigating and improving those standards. But degree completions And just keeping tuition costs down per se, well, they're pretty petty ways to hold back money.
Well, a degree
or
completion,
to grant money.
If you think about it, just a long-term bigger picture, that makes a lot of sense because that person is now out in the workforce and contributing. I this sounds so clinical, but contributing to society, you know, out there generating income, raising a family, doing these things, paying their taxes. So, of course, a degree is a goal, but it shouldn't be the only one that's tied. That shouldn't be the only incentive.
By the way, we'll conclude with this, I guess we have to, because it is time, folks. It's almost 2 o'clock, and WHF Journal is going to make room for the Great Blues Show with Joanne Korchinska, who is in the studio now, so we're going to try to end on time today for something different. But the other thing that got Snyder's ire, and again, he doesn't get mad. He just gets even. No, but he's not a vicious politician, knife in the back Machiavellian, although maybe in private he is, I don't know. But he tries to let the best answer, the best solution, the best business approach win out. And I think that's good. Even as an independent, I can say that. Although I disagree with several of these things, and it's great to do that in an objective way. He had some very, very nasty responses on Facebook. I don't know how people can do that. If you've got a good idea, put it there. But why do you have to sort of yell things at him like all teachers are lazy bastards? Where is that coming from? How do you know that? Are you a teacher? No. You might have had a bad teacher, but I don't know a lazy teacher. I don't know a lazy, much less the bastard part.
Right.
I don't know any of those, and I've known a lot of teachers at Henry Ford Community College and elsewhere, and that's just so wrong to cast that kind of mud, especially on the governor's Facebook page. Where does that get you? But he was also asked, and he answered. He said, what about right to work? Hey, shouldn't everybody have the right to work? That means break the unions down. And so we had a flood of people saying, unions are evil. Kill all the unions.
Wow.
What? Prove it. I don't see that. Look at union history. I've said this weeks ago. Have you studied the history of union? Have you seen the advantages of unions? You know, are they the richest people here in America? Are the bankers part of a union? No. Are the stockbrokers in a union? No. Yet doctors, are they union? No. Okay, they have their associations, but they're not. Prove to me that we should kill them? Give me a... Oh, it really, I don't want to stop free speech, but how these 420 people, at least half of them, were vulgar and insulting, and the governor didn't respond. He said about right to work, though. Mm-hmm. He said, I understand both sides, pro-unions, anti-unions. And again, if we have right to work, you're starting to kill the unions. You will. You will, folks. It's been proven. Okay. And nobody has proven yet to me, who knows union history, how that will help anything. He said, though, not going to get into it.